Senator, on the question of a constitutional amendment to ban abortions and the separation church.
I'm against the constitutional amendment to ban abortion. And we just heard about voluntarism. What's voluntary about the constitutional amendment to ban abortion? And we've also just heard something about a constitutional convention, which is the very apogee of the ambition of the ultra-right to throw the whole Constitution into a tumultuous constitutional convention such as has never been held, and even to jeopardize the first 10 amendments of a Bill of Rights. I think the Supreme Court of the United States has been the Solomon in this case, and it's tried to balance in a fair way, in an intelligent way, the rights of the woman to control her own body and the rights of the unborn when the unborn gets beyond a certain stage. And I think that's a sage, a wise, and a stable social decision. And I do not believe that it ought to be interfered with, and that the separation of the church and state is, again, one of the soundest policies that we have developed in all our history. And I hope we stay with it. To me, that is the way in which to handle it. And I voted against the Hyde Amendment, and would again, and again and again, because a woman is poor doesn't mean that she should be deprived of the same privilege which any other woman has in this country. And that's what the Hyde Amendment is all about. It deprives her of that very right. And those are the women, by the way, who need it most, because it is those large families that cause this syndrome in many cases of poverty.
For rebuttal, Mrs. Mark, well, of course, it's a rather extreme way for birth control. Number one, you're talking about use of taxpayer dollars. An overwhelming number of the Congress has indicated they're opposed to it. And the court, on the divided opinion of 5-4, has agreed that that is a right of Congress. Secondly, I don't think that when you talk about the taking of a life, that gives any dignity to the arguments and the virtues of saying that we have illiteracy, that we have poverty, that we have areas of social discontent that we have to deal with. I think indeed the problems are that the Javitses and the Holtzman have dealt with it in such a way as to say, give more food stamps, give more programs, give more social spending, don't then challenge it and create the kind of initiative that makes for people becoming part of the mainstream. And that's why we have today a social spending situation that has taken us to where 49% of our budget today goes for social spending programs, and we've forgotten the middle class, the taxpayers, the responsible people, the people who meet their obligations. So consequently, it's exactly those, that kind of philosophy that brought us to the era that we are now.
Salzman?
I agree with simply say that the question of when life begins is something that is a philosophical question, and there have been some differences from a religious point of view with respect to that, but the Supreme Court decision, I believe, is the correct one, namely that in the first trimester of pregnancy, decision with regard to whether or not the fetus is to be carried to term is one that a mother it has a right to make, and that government can't interfere. You know, the right to privacy is one of the most important constitutional rights that we have. And I would have thought that as a conservative, you would say, Mr. D'Amato, that there are areas in which the government cannot intervene, and that there is a sphere, a zone of privacy, a zone of individual rights in which the government cannot dictate personal behavior. And I have to feel that that's a very important cornerstone of our democratic freedoms in this society. And I also think that it's not enough to simply say, once I begin to talk about the quality of life for those who live, that, oh, now we're talking about big spending. Because it may well require spending.
Sorry.
I think it has to require careful spending.
Sorry.
But I don't think we can ignore those who live in this society and quality of life that we give them.
Senator? Nor can we ignore the fact that the polls which have been taken for some years indicate that an overwhelming majority of the American people favor the solution of the Supreme Court, and that an overwhelming majority of American women favor it too. And also, this going back to this constitutional convention and the chaos which it could easily cause under the guise of dealing with an anti-abortion defendant is unimaginable, and our people should be oriented to it. And then the concept that the middle class has no heart. There are infant children There are people who need help. There are the old, the lame, the halt, the blind. What are we in this country? We have a heart. We should tighten it up. We should do our utmost to avoid fraud and the inequities to the poor themselves, which that brings. But the idea that food stamps is a crime, a wrong, just on its face, that's ridiculous. And I don't believe the middle class of America feels that.
Mr. Javits, I'm sorry. Thank you. The order of response to our next question, Ms. Holtzman, Mr. Javits, Mr. Amato, question, Doug Edelson, WINS Radio.
Ms. Holtzman, what would you do if elected to the Senate to reduce federally mandated costs now breaking the back to cities, in particular New York City?
Well, I can tell you what I'm doing right now, which is to try to get through a measure, and hearings were just held in the House Rules Committee on this, and I testified just yesterday on that in Washington, and I expect this legislation will be passed in a session of Congress with immense bipartisan support. One of the reasons that Congress has imposed mandates on state and local governments is because sometimes Congress really doesn't know the consequences of its actions. It has very good intentions. It passes bills with wonderful sounding titles, but sometimes people don't know the cost involved. My legislation would require that before Congress passes any measure, we would impose a cost on state and local governments, that Congress be informed of that cost. That legislation is now being supported by the Conference of Mayors, by the League of Cities, by the National Conference of Governors. It has broad bipartisan support. Both Republicans and Democrats support it. And I hope this legislation will be enacted and will prevent the situation from occurring in the future. But we also have to deal with the mandates that have been imposed in the past. And I think in this area, the federal government, if it is going to impose costs on state and local governments, ought to pick up those costs. But I also think, of course, that we have to be worried about whether the money is being carefully spent, prudently spent, and wisely spent, both by the federal government and the state government with federal dollars.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Javits?
Senator Javits, what would you do if we heard of the Senate about federally mandated costs?
Well, I think it's better to say, what am I doing? Because I've been there for a very long time. I've been alert to the situation. The Senate has actually passed a bill which deals with this matter as far as the handicap is concerned. And what it's going to do, and I was a party to it, is to impose a standard of performance rather than a standard of what the particular municipality must do specifically, particular spaces or bars or inclined runways or whatever. That is, the performance has got to be to make it possible for the handicapped to move and to work. And that sound, that performance standard, with all respect to Congresswoman Holtzman, not in any way challenging her sincerity, which I believe is real in this matter, I think it's much more effective than telling us what it's going to cost. Because if it tells us what it's going to cost, we might not do it at all. We have to know what it's going to cost, but we also have to make it practical. And we have to therefore see that there is performance practically by the local people. And if help is needed in order to effectuate that, then we should have some demonstration that that help is needed. And then we can judge whether it's worthwhile. But the cost will go down on that basis very materially. Indeed, the whole federal mandate policy has to be reviewed from that point of view. And I rather like the idea that in the coming years, we try to find...
Mr. Javits, I'm sorry.
Well, I'll do it in the 1 minute.
Mr. Amato, what would you do if elected to the Senate about federally mandated costs to the cities?
The ones were being strangled. The middle class were being strangled. We're being taxed out of existence in this state, in this city. The fact of the matter is that it's been the kind of philosophy that we've just heard articulated. We've built this great social empire, and Congressperson Holtzman and Senator Javits have been part and parcel of this, of building this great social structure that today is crushing the middle class. Today is costing the local governments and the state $8 billion. That today sees a system where we get reimbursed 50% for our welfare and Medicaid, and fabulously wealthy states like Texas and Louisiana get better than 70% reimbursements, where a family of four in Mississippi gets $47, in Texas $110 to $120, in Texas and Louisiana. Is there any wonder why the migration of the nation's poor has come to New York and to the Northeast. Where have we seen any action? We wait till a month before an election, or 2 months, or 3 months, and we begin to address ourselves to that? Where were we 8 years ago, or 7 years ago, or 6 years ago? The first thing to do is to fight to change that formula. At least Daniel Patrick Moynihan has called that to our attention, called that to Carter's attention 3 years ago and 2 years ago and this year. And I would fight to change that welfare system that discriminates against New York. We're entitled to our fair share so that we don't tax out of existence middle class taxpayers, working people, and the business community. And that's what's taking place today in this state.
Now for a vote, Ms. Holtzman.
I introduced legislation even more than 3 years ago to try to deal with the problem of formulas. And there is a very serious problem of discriminatory formulas. But I think we need someone in the United States Senate who's not going to come there for the first time without understanding the problem, but someone who's worked on that problem for a long time. I introduced my legislation on mandates, which will, I think, prevent the problem from arising in the future where the federal government imposes costs on the state and local governments. It's a very important step forward. I think we ought to be doing much more than we are on a federal basis to tighten up government and to make sure that it works. I think the federal government ought to be taking over the cost of welfare. And I fought for that for a long time. And I fought it as a member of the House Budget Committee to introduce legislation to try to have the federal government pick up that cost. And I intend to make that a major fight in the U.S. Senate. We've got to have people fighting very hard for that. But we've also got to have people know what they're doing.
Sorry, I
suppose it would be fair to say that if you're looking for somebody with experience, you don't have to advertise. I've been there for 24 years myself. And we might remember that Nixon tried to reform the welfare system with a basic federal standard way back when, in the 70s, and he was defeated by the very votes which a senator like Mr. D'Amato would cast. He was not defeated by liberals and moderates. He was defeated by the right wing. Because what their feeling is about welfare is that there's something either phony or dishonest about it. And that even welfare mothers or children or anybody else, something, some monkey business about welfare. And that was the reason, in my judgment, for the defeat of that welfare reorganization. And we haven't had another chance since because it is the Senate and the House of lots of people who represent lots of other people with very different ideas from our own.
Mr. Javis, I'm sorry. Rebuttal, Mr. Kamara. Let's get something straight. I didn't help create this fiasco, the sham that we have. It's not the fact that my voice has been silent in terms of calling for basic change and fighting to bring together a coalition of Democrats and Republicans and people who care to make this state one that where people can be livable, where our young people have job opportunities, and where businesses aren't chased out of this area. The fact of the matter is that both of you have had a combination of some 40 years in building this social morass. I haven't heard you raise your voice until we've come to this point in time. The fact of the matter is it's not an ultra-right conspiracy to say that people are tired of seeing an abuse of the system. People are tired of seeing those who will not work, who are not productive, in a better situation than they are. They're tired of seeing Congressperson Holtzman vote against reform of basic legislation that would make the system more accountable. They're tired of seeing a system, for example, where we say, let's give the states the ability to have make work so the people and states have the ability to say, go out to work if you want to be entitled to the welfare system. Mr. D'Amato, I'm sorry. The order of response to our next and final question will be Mr. Javis, Mr. D'Amato, Ms. Holtzman.
Imposed the mandatory wage price controls. It abused the current high interest rates as a form of self-discipline in a time of inflation. And finally, no income taxes cut, at least until 1981. Do you agree with this Carter inflation control program?
I do not agree with the secretary on a tax cut. I do agree with him on wage and price control, but I do not agree on a tax cut. We need a tax cut right now, which should be heavily targeted at the business system to induce it and give it reasons for modernizing the American industrial plan. The very base of inflation giving full credit to federal deficits and the spending problem. And I, like everybody else, are lending himself to those cuts, and they're very hard to take, but they're being made. I have voted in the Senate for $13 billion in cuts for this reason. But that is not going to end inflation. What will end inflation is greater production and greater competitiveness on the part of the United States. And to bring that about, you need a tax cut heavily targeted at business specifically for that purpose. I believe half a tax cut should go there. As to a tax cut for the individual, it should encourage savings. We're now giving, in one of my projects, and it came to fruition, $200 in interest, tax-free. That ought to go to 500, hopefully to 1,000. That is an interest earned on savings to be tax-free. This is the way to encourage the American industrial machine to move and to give the employment which we need and which our youth need so very urgently. It's now becoming almost a question of social breakdown.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Especially minority.
Steve, the question again to Mr. DeMotto.
Mr. DeMotto, Treasury Secretary William Miller said today the administration is absolutely opposed to mandatory wage price controls, that it views the current high interest rates as a form of self-discipline necessary in a time of inflation, and finally, no income tax cuts at least until before 1981. Do you agree with this card inflation program?
Well, Steve, let's touch on a few other things. Number one, the wage and price controls actually work against the wage earner. When you have a 9% ceiling for wage earners and then you have a 13% inflation rate, you're already throwing the system out of kilter. Secondly, I think what we need is a fiscal discipline coupled with a tax reduction. Now, that's not going to throw the budget out of whack, because over the next 5 years, if we were not to touch the tax rates, we would see the budget produce more than $1 trillion. And so consequently, a tax cut across the board so that middle-class taxpayers can retain more of their money is not going to deprive the government of less revenue in terms of total revenues. As a matter of fact, if have the Kempforth tax bill next year, the government still would have some $20 billion plus over and above the revenues anticipated or taken in this year. And as a matter of fact, over a five-year period of time, it would have more than $200 billion. What we're simply saying is don't go to $1 trillion. Let people retain for themselves. And then, let's target tax relief. I support the Urban Enterprise and Jobs bill by Kemp and Garcia. Congressman Kemp and Congressman Garcia says that they'll cut taxes in the inner core cities, in those zones, in the South Bronx, in Bed-Stuy, to encourage business development, to encourage employers, small business, to be able to go out and put people to work, not at the end of CETA dead-end jobs, not at the end of a Carter rake or a broom, a $900,000
or
people job program. That's counterproductive.
Steve, question again from Ms.
Congresswoman Holtzman. Treasury Secretary William Miller said today the administration is absolutely opposed to mandatory wage price controls, and that it views the current high interest rates as a form of self-discipline necessary in a time of inflation, and finally, no income tax at least before 1981. Do you agree with this Carter inflation control program?
Well, let me say that the proposals that have been made and echoed by others at this table for across-the-board tax cuts for business could have a devastating impact on New York State's economy. I was chair of the House Budget Committee's task force on state and local governments. We've held hearings on the impact of across-the-board tax cuts for business. It could lead to an exodus of business from this state. I believe we have to have targeted tax cuts and tax incentives to encourage industry in New York State to modernize itself, to expand itself in New York, to create additional jobs in New York. But New York taxpayers should not be subsidizing an exodus of business from New York to the Sun Belt, an exodus of business from New York to other countries, and a loss of jobs, which would happen by an across-the-board tax cut for business. Secondly, I oppose the increase in Social Security taxes. I believe it should be offset. Third, I think that the problem of rapid creep, which means that as we have more inflation, people pay higher taxes because of our progressive tax rate, ought to be reviewed. We ought to think about expanding the bracket so that people don't automatically get pushed into a higher bracket as a result of inflation. I think we have to impose controls on the price of American gas and American oil and not let the price be set by Arab oil sheiks. That's a major way of dealing with the inflation. I think we also need to have hospital cost containment. Medical prices have been one of the major elements of the inflation.
Sorry, Ms. Holtzman, your time's up.
On that, I voted for hospital cost containment.
Now for rebuttal, Mr. Javits.
Nobody said anything about across the board tax cuts for business. I certainly was not aware of it. The fact is that it is a targeted tax cut that we absolutely need in this state if we're going to keep business. Because otherwise, it will rush away to where wages are cheaper, costs of transportation are cheaper, etc. And as to the 30% tax cut, which is based on the so-called Laffer-Curve theory, don't laugh when you say that. But the theory is that in 3 years, a deficit which will be at the end of the third year, $75 to $80 billion in a deficiency in tax revenues is going to be made up by increased business. It simply cannot happen, and it won't happen, and it will result in an inflation which will make double-digit 10% inflation look small and satisfactory compared to what we're going to get. So I'm definitely against that Roth-Kent bill, and have been against it, and have voted against it, and will continue to. The 10% tax cut.
Mr. DeMato? Number one, I set up with the Kent Garcia Urban Enterprise Bill and Congressperson Holtzman. If you were down in Congress, you missed 53% of the votes, you'd see that that bill targets aid to depressed areas in such a way that it will create jobs and job incentives. It will reduce payroll taxes in those areas, such as Bedford-Stuyvesant, such as the South Bronx, in other areas of high unemployment. It's the kind of thing we have to do if we're going to keep business in this state. I fail to see and understand a theory that says that you're going to chase business out of the state. Secondly, let me say that you voted for the Council of Wages and Price Control. I think that council is counterproductive, and what it's done is it's held down those kinds of wages that people are entitled to in an inflationary period of time. Third of all, I want to tell you, you're for a $12 billion jobs program, which is putting more people to work on the federal payroll and the state payrolls and the county payrolls, and I say better to give business incentives to challenge this economy. We need real jobs.
Ms. Holtzman? I think we need real jobs in the private sector, but I won't tell people, as perhaps you're prepared to, that they ought to wait on unemployment rolls or on welfare rolls until those real jobs are created. We have double-digit unemployment in major cities around the state, and I think people ought to go to work. And I think they need jobs. And on top of that, unemployment happens to cost us money. It costs the federal government close to $20 billion for every percentage above inflation, above 5.5% unemployment. I think that's a high price to pay. And let me say also that I'm concerned about oil companies. I haven't heard anyone here address that issue. The fact of the matter is one of the highest taxes that consumers are paying, homeowners are paying, has to do with increased home heating oil costs, increased utility rates, increased natural gas rates. Brooklyn Union Gas Company just increased its rates by 31%. I think someone has to stand up to these rate increases. And I notice also that under Mr. DeMato, Nassau County residents are paying the highest tax rate of any residents of the state of New York.
That concludes our round of questioning. Each candidate will now be permitted a 90-second closing statement. The order for these closing statements will be Mr. Javits, Mr. DeMato, and Ms. Holtzman. Mr. Javits.
The cry, as I see it, is to tell the people the truth. And this is what I have tried to do. I said that I would run after all these years of service, because I felt that they were so imperiled, both at home and abroad, and I think these questions, any debate, brings that out, that the assets which they had given me of clout in the Senate, and of experience, and of seniority, I had a right and a duty to put these again at their service if they wished it. And notwithstanding the vicissitudes of this campaign, I have done that, and I will continue to do it to the best of my ability. We're in war right now in terms of a war in the world, which is serious. I'm the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee. There is feeling about formulae, which hurt New York. I am the senior member in service of the Labor and Human Resources Committee, which deals with health, with education, with youth, with the aged, with a great part of welfare. There's complaint about government bureaucracy. I'm the senior member of the Governmental Affairs Committee, which deals with the organization of government. All of these assets I offered to my people, and I believe this is a time when they ought to use them.
Thank you, Mr. Gravitz. Mr. DeMott. We are in a very precarious time today. Whether we be Republicans or Democrats or citizens, we recognize this. Let me reflect back to a statement that was made by a great American president. He said, only if our arms are strong beyond a doubt can we be certain beyond a doubt that they will never have to be used. That was John F. Kennedy. He made this statement almost 20 years ago. That statement is truer today than it was then, or at least is as true. Congressperson Holtzman has voted against every single military appropriation since she entered into the Congress until today. The fact of the matter remains, we're not talking about cutting waste. She cut the heart, the guts, the vitality out of our military. Whether it's the Navy, whether it's the Army, whether it's the Marines, that's the record. You don't have to listen to Al D'Amato to suggest that. You might say, well, you've got something, you're prejudiced. Let me read a statement. I'm not suggesting that she is a left-wing Soviet sympathizer. She just did not believe in the necessary arms to protect this country. That's Mairead Koch, New York Magazine, September 8th. The fact of the matter is that Congressman Holtzman has voted against every single arms bill that has come down the pipe in the past 8 years. You can't run away from that record and say that I was just against waste. The fact of the matter is that you vote to cut $8 billion out of a budget without even beginning to talk about cuts.
Sorry.
That's why we're in a precarious position that we are in today.
Ms. Holtzman.
Well, Mayor Koch is endorsing me, Mr. D'Amato, and not you. So is Senator Moynihan, so is Doug McCary, and so are a large number of the senators in the United States Congress, and also my colleagues in the Congress, because I've been in the House of Representatives now for 7.5 years, and I'm a new generation of Democrat. I believe our programs have to be humane, but I think government has to work. We have to be careful with our tax dollars. And I've got a record of fighting against waste and corruption and mismanagement in social programs. And I criticize waste and mismanagement and corruption wherever it appears. People want integrity in government. And I've got a record for integrity. In the Afghan cases, I understand that members of Congress who were indicted told undercover FBI agents, don't even try and bribe that Holtzman. She's too honest to trust. Well, I bring that record to the United States Senate. And let's talk about another part of the middle class. America's women, working wives, who now have to work with their husbands just to make ends meet. I support the Equal Rights Amendment because I want to see those women paid a decent salary. I want to see them pay decent pension rights. I don't want to see a situation which now persists where when both husband and wife have to work, the wife is going to be denied adequate Social Security coverage. She's not going to get adequate pension coverage. She's going to not earn a decent salary. She's not going to get adequate promotion rights. I support the Equal Rights Amendment.
Our time is up, and I want to thank the participants in this debate, the candidates, Alphonse D'Amato, Elizabeth Holtzman, and Jacob Gravitz, and our panel of questioners, Doug Edelson of WINS Radio, Steve Flanders, WCBS Radio, Gabe Pressman, WNBC-TV, and Bob Minlin of Newhouse News Service. The most important participant in this electoral process will be you, the voter. Election day is November 4th. The deadline for registration is October 6th. For more information about registration by mail, you can contact the New York City Board of Elections at 131 Barrett Street. We want to thank as well the New York Telephone Company for allowing us to use their facilities.
voted for it.